Blog Talk Radio. Yes, yes, yes. This is another episode of Wake Up African People, and this is the Truth Doctor coming to you tonight with the Intellectual Pimp Gang. Yes, we all have been pimped, and we're still being pimped today by Negroes who are out just to get money and are not taking you nowhere. They are not going to fight no revolution. They don't want no revolution. Some of them are paid directly by the government. Some of them are paid directly by you in your ignorance. Because us as a people are not doing what we have to do to get free. We're not taking the right steps. All this reactionary stuff is nothing more than a game set up by the powers that be. You're still following the same script. This thing goes all the way back to W.E.B. Du Bois. W.E.B. Du Bois wanted to get his hand in some of that money that Booker T. Washington was controlling that was coming from the white entrepreneurs. And he seen that money, they hated Booker T. because Booker T. was in control of all the Negroes at that particular time, and what money was going to go to this one and what money was going to go to that one. He may be considered as one of the first, what we call elites, the light-skinned upper class people they call color people back in the day. But other Negroes along the line started calling themselves color. But the real first color people was mulattoes that master put on top. He educated them, sent them to schools, built schools for them, Howard University, all kinds of institutions for his children. And he sent them there, and he put them over top of the Negroes because he had them, his blood in them, and he could trust them more than he could trust a full-breed Negro. But now we have Negroes today that claim they're full-breed as worse than these other people back in the day. But I don't want to down Booker T. Washington. Don't get me wrong, because he did try to do something on the slide to help black people. But he did bow down, you know, to white supremacy, telling them to cast their buckets here, the Negroes will work for you, you know. But on the other side, he was encouraging Negroes to build their own stuff, and he was supporting it. So, you know, he had to play both sides of the fence to get something done. I see that as an admirable thing. I don't see that as a sellout or a coon. But W.D. Du Bois was trying to say he was a coon. He was trying to down him because he just told the white people, look, we don't want to worry about your politics and everything right now because they just came out of slavery. The hell they get don't want to know about politics and stuff. I mean, the South had went into politics earlier, but, you know, a lot of stuff happened. You know, they kicked them out. You know, the white folks didn't want the black people over top of them. So he told the whites up north, look, cash your buckets down where you are. Negroes get jobs, learn how to be artisans and all this stuff to build your own stuff. Our people were trying to build their own reality in this land. It wasn't about assimilation and going in and wanting to go in their restaurants and stores and everything and get so crazy about it that you give up all your own stuff just to be with them in the condition that we are in today. And there's nobody of any significance that you guys like to follow out here that's talking this type of talk. They just all this YouTube videos and all these different things giving you some information that's going to take you nowhere. But we're trying to give you information that wake up African people that's going to get you back on the right track. See, we didn't create this. Our ancestors created this movement of self-help, self-development, do for self, have self. And the last person that was preaching that real strong was the Nation of Islam. Do for self. And you seen the Muslims had a lot of stuff and when they was at their apex before Honorable Elijah Muhammad died. And even afterwards, with his son, even though he went away from his father's teachings, he still encouraged business and do for self. Because that was in their blood, do for self. The do for self movement was the real movement that we neglected in order to go to the white man's stores, to go to the white man's toilet, to try to swim in the same pool the white man in, basically ride on the front of the bus with the white man. You just couldn't get enough of trying to throw yourself in this white man's house, and the reaction is he's kicking your ass. So, you know, whose fault is it really? You know, if you really want to look at this thing, whose fault is it? The Negro that's trying to bust this white man's door down and make him accept him instead of growing up and being a man of his own self and taking the world into his own hands and creating his own reality as a people. But you want to kick the white man in and barge in on his reality because you feel as though you're lower than the white man because he conquered you, because he emasculated you, Because he do any damn thing he want to do to you anytime he get ready. And you ain't going to do a goddamn thing but get on your knees and beg master to stop. But if it was a black man or a black woman that went upside your head, you ready to take blood? I mean, you're a vicious killer when it comes to your own people. You're a vicious killer when the white man tells you to go kill for him, to his wars and all that stuff. But Negroes, when are you going to wake up and try to do for self and fight for self and do and make a way for your children and your lineage that's behind you? Because right now, we're failing our race. Astro Black, play the clip.
Right on, sisters and brothers. Here's a clip of Malcolm X from 1964 talking about the state of black state of black America, black revolution, and the fact that the Big Six in the during the march on Washington was actually a circus and was sold out and co-opted and infiltrated by the white liberals and the white elite corporate and political institutions.
Took Tom and dressed him well and fed him well and even gave him a little education. Gave him a long coat and a top hat and made all the other slaves look up to him. Then he used Tom to control them. The same strategy that was used in those days is used today by the same white man. He take a Negro, so-called Negro, and make him prominent. Build him up, publicize him, make him a celebrity, and then he becomes a spokesman for Negroes and a Negro leader. I would like to just mention one thing else quickly, and that is the method that the white man uses. How the white man uses these big guns or Negro leaders against the black revolution. They're not a part of the black revolution. They're used against the black revolution. When Martin Luther King failed to desegregate Albany, Georgia, the civil rights struggle in America reached its low point. King became bankrupt almost as a leader. Plus, even financially, the Southern Christian Leadership Conference was in financial trouble, plus it was in trouble, period, with the people when they failed to desegregate Albany, Georgia. Other Negro civil rights leaders of so-called national stature became fallen idols. As they became fallen idols, began to lose their prestige and influence, local Negro leaders began to stir up the masses. In Cambridge, Maryland, Gloria Richardson. In Danville, Virginia, and other parts of the country, local leaders begin to stir up our people at the grassroots level. This was never done by these Negroes whom you recognize of national stature. They controlled you, but they never incited you or excited you. They controlled you. They contained you. They kept you on the plantation. As soon as King failed in Birmingham, Negroes took to the streets. King got out and went out to California to a big rally and raised about, I don't know how many thousands of dollars. Come to Detroit and had a march and raised some more thousands of dollars. And recall, right after that, Wilkins attacked King. Accused King and the Corps of starting trouble everywhere and then making the NAACP get him out of jail and spend a lot of money, and then he accused King and Corps of raising all the money and not paying it back. This happened. I got it in documented evidence in the newspaper. Roy started attacking King, and King started attacking Roy, and Farmer started attacking both of them. And as these Negroes of national stature begin to attack each other, they begin to lose their control of the Negro masses. And Negroes was out there in the streets They was talking about we're going to march on Washington. By the way, right at that time, Birmingham had exploded, and the Negroes in Birmingham, remember, they also exploded. They began to stab the crackers in the back and bust them upside the head. Yes, they did. That's when Kennedy sent in the troops down in Birmingham. So, and right after that, Kennedy got on the television and said, this is a moral issue. That's when he said he's going to put out a civil rights bill. And when he mentioned civil rights bill and the Southern crackers start talking about they were going to boycott it or filibuster, then the Negroes start talking about what? We're going to march on Washington, march on the Senate, march on the White House, march on the Congress, and tie it up, bring it to a halt. Don't let the government proceed. They even said they were going to go out to the airport and lay down on the runway and don't let no airplanes land. I'm telling you what they said. That was revolution. That was revolution. That was the Black Revolution. It was the grassroots out there in the street. Scared the white man to death. Scared the white power structure in Washington, D.C. to death. I was there. When they found out that this black steamroller was going to come down on the Capitol, they called in Wilkins. They called in Randolph. They called in these national Negro leaders that you respect. And told them, call it off. Kennedy said, look, y'all letting this thing go too far. And old Tom said, boss, I can't stop it because I didn't start it. I'm telling you what they said. They said, I'm not even in it, much less at the head of it. They said, these Negroes are doing things on their own. They're running ahead of us. And that old shrewd fox, he said, well, if you all aren't in it, I'll put you in it. I'll put you at the head of it. I'll endorse it. I'll welcome it. I'll help it. I'll join it. A matter of hours went by. They had a meeting at the Carlisle Hotel in New York City. The Carlisle Hotel is owned by the Kennedy family. That's the hotel Kennedy spent the night at two nights ago. Belongs to his family. A philanthropic society headed by a white man named Stephen Currier called all the top civil rights leaders together at the Carlisle Hotel and told them that by you all fighting each other, you're destroying the civil rights movement. And since you're fighting over money from white liberals, let us set up what's known as the Council for United Civil Rights Leadership. Let's form this council, and all the civil rights organizations will belong to it. And we'll use it for fundraising purposes. Let me show you how tricky the white man is. And as soon as they got it formed, they elected Whitney Young as the chairman. And who you think became the co-chairman? Stephen Currier, the white man. A millionaire. Powell was talking about it down at the Cobo today. This is what he was talking about. Powell knows it happened. Randolph knows it happened. Wilkins knows it happened. King knows it happened. Every one of that so-called Big Six, they know what happened. Once they formed it with the white man over it, he promised them and gave them $800,000. To split up between the Big Six and told them that after the march was over, they'd give them $700,000 more, $1.5 million, split up between leaders that you've been following, going to jail for, crying crocodile tears for, and they're nothing but Frank James and Jesse James and brothers. Soon as they got the setup organized, the white man made available to them top public relations experts. Opened the news media across the country at their disposal. And then they began to project these Big Six as the leaders of the march. Originally, they weren't even in the march. You was talking this march talk on Hastings Street. Is Hastings Street still here? On Hastings Street. You were talking the march talk on Lenox Avenue and down on, Fillmore Street. in Central Avenue, in 42nd Street, in 63rd Street. That's where the march talk was being talked. But the white man put the Big Six ahead of it, made them the march. They became the march. They took it over. And the first move they made after they took it over, they invited Walter Ruther, a white man. They invited a priest, a rabbi, and an old white preacher. Yeah, the old white preacher. The same white element that put Kennedy in power, labor, the Catholics, the Jews, and liberal Protestants, same clique that put Kennedy in power, joined the March on Washington. It's just like when you got some coffee that's too black, which means it's too strong. What you do? You integrate it with cream. You make it weak. If you pour too much cream in, you won't even know you ever had coffee. It used to be hot, it becomes cool. It used to be strong, it becomes weak. It used to wake you up, now it'll put you to sleep. This is what they did with the March on Washington. They joined it. They didn't integrate it, they infiltrated it. They joined it, became a part of it, took it over. And as they took it over, it lost its militancy. They ceased to be angry. They ceased to be hot. They ceased to be uncompromising. Why, it even ceased to be a march. It became a picnic, a circus. Nothing but a circus with clowns and all. We had one right here in Detroit. I saw it on television with clowns leading, white clowns and black clowns. I know you don't like what I'm saying, but I'm going to tell you anyway. Because I can prove what I'm saying. If you think I'm telling you wrong, you bring me Martin Luther King and A. Philip Randolph and James Farmer and those other three and see if they'll deny it over the microphone. No, it was a sellout. It was a takeover. When James Baldwin came in from Paris, they wouldn't let him talk because they couldn't make him go by the script. Bert Lancaster wrote the speech that Baldwin was supposed to make. They wouldn't let Baldwin get up there because they know Baldwin liable to say anything. They controlled it so tight, they told those Negroes what time to hit town, how to come, where to stop, what sign to carry, what song to sing, what speech they could make and what speech they couldn't make. And then told them to get out of town by sundown. And every one of those towns were out of town by sundown. Now, I know you don't like my saying this, but I can back it up. It was a circus, a performance. It beat anything Hollywood could ever do. The performance of the year, Ruther and those other three devils should get an Academy Award for the best actors because they acted like they really loved Negroes and fooled a whole lot of Negroes. And the six Negro leaders should get an award, too, for the best supporting cast.
All right. Black and Strong, brothers and sisters. If you notice some of the references that King Malcolm, El-Hash, Malik El-Shabazz was saying during the course of his speech, you take note that he's talking to, of course, a united body of brothers and sisters in New York. He makes reference to Lenox Avenue, which is now known as Malcolm X Boulevard. Most of us know the type of people that he was talking to then, and who and the descendants of those now are people who are strong and black and proud to be so. And despite the fact that in retrospect the 1963 March on Washington is promoted by the liberal even and as well as conservative when the time is conveniently chosen as a shining point in the civil rights movement, with eyes clear, vision and with eyes open and vision clear, Brother Malcolm made it very clear that the event in Washington in 63 was intended to be a siege on Washington. That we're supposed to march on the White House lawn, we're supposed to march on Congress, we're supposed to stop all traffic, whether by land, air, or sea. We're supposed to lay down on the runway. We're supposed to create a complete catastrophe in D.C. and marking the beginning of a long-standing revolution that was happening for black liberation and black self-reliance and self-defense. And it was the Big Six who had sold out their people. And the Big Six, in retrospect, the name was coined by James Farmer, Big Six. And again, Brother Malcolm spells out the exact details of the shakedown that happened that betrayed the black liberation struggle in America to Kennedy, to the Jews, to the Catholics, and to the liberal Protestant preachers. Kennedy formed the Council of United Civil Rights Leadership. And from then on, you see these figureheads being placed for you on the main bandstand. These are leaders that are not selected by the movement. They're not selected from the grassroots. But these are leaders who are chosen by the white devils in the big house. And again, the Big Six are Martin Luther King. All of us know who he is. The chairman of the SCLC and a Baptist minister. James Farmer, a pacifist, who is the founder of CORE, the Congress of Racial Equality. John Lewis, who is a mainstay in Congress even today. He paved the way for his long-standing political career as a career politician, to do nothing and say nothing. He was a young man then, he's an old man now, still playing the same tricks with the same devils. A. Philip Randolph, who was a socialist in the labor movement, and he organized the Brotherhood for Sleeping Car Porters. Roy Wilkins, Uncle Tom Number One, who time and time again, as executive director of the NAACP, would stab other prominent and grassroots leaders in the back for his Jewish handlers. And Whitney Young, who at the time was placed as the director of the Council for United Civil Rights Leadership. But so clearly and so poignantly and so cleverly, Brother Malcolm gives the example of the coffee. It starts out as strong and black, but when you integrate it with cream, it puts you to sleep. And you won't even know you had coffee if you put too much of it in it. But quite frankly, in regards to the global black civil rights, black human rights, and black liberation struggle for equality, self-determination, and justice, when the white liberals infiltrate and organize their shakedown of our political, economic, and social struggles, you won't even know that we are a nation of indigenous African people. You won't know that we are the caretakers of civilization. You won't know that we are the fathers and mothers of humanity. And quite frankly, you might damn near forget that we are the greatest fighting machine on two legs, male and female. Stay strong and stay black. Brother Akbar.
Yes, 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 my brother. I just want to correct you on one thing. That speech Malcolm made was in Detroit. He mentioned Hastings Street. That was the first place they had a Nation of Islam mosque at, temple that
word,
on Hastings Street in Detroit. So then he mentioned Lenox Avenue next, because, you know, he was a New York minister. He was a minister of New York before he left the Nation of Islam and everything, or they expelled him, whatever, how the way that went. But does this sound familiar to what we got going on today? We got these intellectual pimps running around. They no direction. They are leading the people in no direction whatsoever. Now they have YouTube, and you know, they want to build themselves up with black leaders. And this is what these black poverty pimps had figured out a long time ago. If you get a following, the white man will come, and he will pay you. He will give you money. He will give you you know, what they call the things that they give the gangs. They gave the gang in Chicago the same thing. They will let you get. They will give you grant money and everything to take you over. They will buy you out before you can get, you know, to a certain power. And they've been doing this trickery for years, the intellectual pimps. And they come in all sorts. They can be political intellectual pimps. They can be religious intellectual pimps. They can be just college educated intellectual pimps. I mean, they come in all types, and they've been doing this for a long time. And Marcus Garvey, this was before Marcus Garvey, but Marcus Garvey said, you know, I guess they was really doing it before he got here, you know, a little bit, you know, little groups here and there. But the main dog in the house, the number one top person that was in charge of everything was Booker T. Washington at the time. And all the other people was hitting at him, trying to take him down so they can get control of the money. Because this thing has always been about money. You know, like W.E.B. Du Bois, when World War I was started, he told black soldiers, don't go to the war. You're not being treated right here and everything. And they gave him some money and a position, you know, and he sold out and started telling black men, it's honorable, go ahead, go to war. We must fight, you know, the fascists. In Italy, I mean, against the fascists in Italy and Germany and all this other stuff. See, Negroes, these so-called self-appointed leaders and the ones that the white man prop up in front of you have been selling us down the drain for the longest. And like Malcolm said, when you put the white in, the milk in, to the dark coffee, you make it weak. And this is what's happening today. All these movements you got, Stand Up, Don't Shoot, the whites done got into that. Black Lives Matters. The whites done got in that. I went to one downtown here in Philly, you know, when the Baltimore thing went down. I'm thinking black people about to get down. I get down, there's more white folks and homosexuals and every type of degenerate you can think of down there, and the socialists. I mean, they had their number one top dog here in Philly, the black representative, Pam Africa. You know, and a lot of these people, they run with these whites because the whites get their money. You know, the whites take care of them. And then they get out here and they get money from you. They take donations, and now they got donations on the internet, GoFundMe and PayPal, and y'all just throwing y'all money away at nothing. Y'all casting y'all pearls to swine, you know. And the thing is we have to, as a people, start thinking differently. This is not the way to go. Just keep on being used as some type of political football, as Malcolm called it, and your own people that say they represent you, say they love you, call black women queens and everything. A lot of these jokers are just plain thieves. And I miss one of them, the one that like to write books about all the old stuff, them another intellectual pimp. They write the books, give you all this information in the books, but they never have a problem solve our problem as a people. And, you know, we got to listen. You got to listen. I'm considered an elder now. I'll be 53 years old next month. I done seen a lot. But I have an elder on this phone that's even older than me that's seen more than I seen. And you got to understand, when people has been out here longer than you and they know more than you and seen more than you, you got to yield to that and listen and sit back and try to put this thing together. Because this thing is not a joke, our people's plight. It's not a joke. This movement is not a joke. It became a joke. You got these guys in here telling you can sell dope now. And, you know, you can pimp women and just to get money. I mean, this thing is totally degenerate, this so-called movement we got. And it's been going this way for a long time. But now today, it's just nothing more than a pure joke. Brother Bartley, the mic is yours.
Yes. How y'all doing tonight? And y'all doing good?
Yes, sir.
Well,
yes, yes.
I had a very good experience today that really made my eyes open up more. As you know, every day your consciousness is expanding. When I look back at the movement, I was a real young man when all this stuff was going on. I had the mentality of a street person because I was a street person out in the streets with the gangs and the hustlers and the pimps and all that. But anyway, we learn in the streets that there's a sucker born every second. And the game is never give a sucker an even break. And that's been happening for us for a very long time. You mentioned the Honorable Mark Garvey. The same thing that's happening today happened in that era. Even before him, you had, after the Civil War, they was trying to decide what they were going to do with the Negro population. Some of them wanted to go back to Africa, and some of them wanted to stay here. So they let the ministers decide what, you know, what the position that our people was going to what path we were going to follow. The ministers told us to stay in America and integrate. So ever since that time, it's been the same thing. Ministers making decisions for our people. And by them making the decisions, they deal with some emotional, mystical stuff, and they get us to follow that. Now, when you're talking about movements, I'm going to be frank with you. From my perspective, we've been hustled all the time, all along, and that's not going to change. As long as this money is circulating like it is, we're living high off the hog. We're the most educated and rich slaves in the world. So as long as that continues, long as the man is in power and feeding, clothing, and sheltering you, he's going to control your life. You see what I'm saying? Now, the only way we think that the Internet, I call it cyberspace. We think that cyberspace, with all this information flowing, we know about Malcolm, we know about everybody who was in the movement. That's not going to change our condition. If money has us trapped here, then it's going to take resources and wealth to get us out of that. Now, the wealth is in us. We are the wealth of this country. The country was built off of our back. So we're the wealth of this country. Getting back to my point, we have been used as a pawn in this game by the intellectual so-called African American. We have always been that pawn. I'm talking about the grassroots people. We've always been a pawn. The educated class, the so-called religious class, the so-called educational class, and the cultural class, they've been sold out. So it's common knowledge among men who have understanding that we've been sold out, we've been pimped. I'm gonna give you a little scenario. When I was in the nation, we were supposed to be doing a security job. So we were down at the location, and it was about 3 drug addicts, 2 Puerto Rican, and 1 black guy that I knew. So the Puerto Rican guy said to me, he said, I don't think what the fuck's going on. He said, you're going to educate the people who you're trying to pimp. It didn't really dawn on me what he was saying at that time. You're saying that you can't be a pimp if you're educating your hookers or whatever, your mob. You know what I mean? You don't educate them, you keep them dumb. So in our situation, we have been kept dumb by the master pimp. All right, we know who the master pimp is, and then his surrogate, which are that class who had considered themselves to be colored, okay, that class. So that class was more or less like this bottom girl. You see what I'm saying? That bottom girl keep the rest of the girls in check. And plus, they go out and recruit for the pimp. So this pimp game you're talking about is, like someone stated, it's all about who is in control of food, clothing, and shelter. If you don't control that, then you can talk revolution till the cows come home. It's not going to change. The only time I believe that this thing would change if the economy goes into an all-out collapse. I'm talking about a visible collapse that you can see in the behavior, in the movement of the people, business, etc. So, you know, we fool ourselves. We are delusional. Well, we think that just because we're angry at the treatment of our people by the oppressor, and we march, we go to Washington, D.C. with 1 million men, and you say, atone. That was the worst. That was the worst time in my life. I didn't want to go in the first place. Huh? I didn't want to go in the first place. But my lady, because she was in love with Farrakhan, I'm going to go down there. So I took my butt down there, and it was just like I thought. At home. And that shocked me. So the reality is this. In order for us to change the condition that we're in, we are going to have to get in the street and go door to door, communicate with our people face to face, and give them the proper information so that they can make informed decisions about where they want to go in America. You know, that's my estimation. But there's plenty of stories I could tell. But one thing I do know, the bottom line is that everything you see and you think that is for you, that is real, is not. It's bought and paid for. The proof is in the pudding. Our condition proved that we've been hustled, and it proved that we're still being hustled because no one is making a real serious move towards changing it. And you're not going to change it in the newspaper, the internet, YouTube. It's not going to change. You can be a YouTube revolution all you want. It's not going to change anything until you get into these streets and start politicizing these people and understand the political game that's being played. All right? So when you look at Dearborn, Michigan, in the Muslim population in Dearborn, how they, as a group, took over that city. You see, and we sitting here like a bump on the log talking about revolution. And we're not acquiring the land and the things that's necessary to even live and create a nation. You see what I'm saying? With all the technology and science that they have, we're not using it like other people use to build for their kind, their group. We have no idea what it means to be a group of people because we were not brought here to be a group. We were brought here to be worked and to be assimilated as a slave to the ruling class. And that's the bottom line. We're nothing but a slave that's being pimped. That's all I can say at this moment.
Yes. Yes, 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 brother. And today, what Malcolm explained sounds just like some of the same stuff we got going on. Now they're going to have a anniversary march. What they going to do when they go down there? Sit back down there and tell them to atone again? I mean, this thing is becoming a hilarious joke. I mean, and the people are laughing at us. The crackers is laughing at us. The Asians is laughing at us. You know, the Mexicans, everybody laughing at you. You're the only person, only group of people in America still marching down to Washington and begging. Everybody else is building. They working together. They producing stuff. You know, we as a people must be, I mean, if you ain't blind, you got to see this. We need to do like Cuba did and Japan did. John Henry Clark used to like to use the Japanese model. How they went in there after that, the bombs fell on them, and they went in there and they built their people up. They built their people up, and now they're one of the most prosperous countries when it comes to producing things. Cuba, the same thing. They send their young people all throughout educating the older people. That was a grassroots movement, too. They had total literacy in the whole of Cuba. So we had to go grassroots. That's the only movement that's going to work for us, is to go grassroots. When you go, you need to stop going to these damn lectures because they don't make no sense anymore, and have workshops. Have workshops. Get the people in your community that know something. If you got a plumber in your community, get them to come down there and do a plumbing workshop. If you got an electrician in your community, have them to come down there and show the children, adults, anybody that want to come, be an electrician. You know, give them the basics, you know, because you still got to go to school and get certified. But you can get the basics before you go there from these people that will help you to be up on the things before you get there. So, you know, my lady, she makes jewelry. And we're going to have workshops on jewelry. We're going to have workshops on plumbing, workshops on tile setting. And we're going to bring people in that know computers so they can come in and teach and have workshops, teach you how to work that computer right to make some money. You know, you're going to have people that come in and tell you how to invest and how to buy property. You know, this is the things we need to be doing, grassroots community stuff to build up our community. We have these centers. You can't say we ain't got nowhere to go. The white man has built these centers right in your community that most Negroes don't use, like here in Philly. Instead of children being over in the center, these children rather be out in the middle of the street, blocking the street off, playing basketball in the street and everything. And it has a lot to do with the way the parents is raising them. It ain't no parenting no more. And we need a radical makeover of our people because we are looked upon as animals. Come on. It done reversed. The white man was looked on as a beast and an animal. Now the world is looking on the race of people that come from the number one race here in America, Africa, and everywhere as nothing more than some beasts for them to go and exploit and do whatever they want to do to them. And that this is the paradox. We're getting ready to play this other clip. Now, these guys who sell out will go and, you know, say what the white man wanted to say and calm you down, like the Sharptons of the day, like the Malik Zulu Shabazz of the day, acting like they going to be a revolution and you ain't never seen them pull one gun on the Honkies or the Ku Klux Klan, talking about the Black Panther Party going down there to fight the Ku Klux Klan, and they going to fight. This is all theatrics. Then they want money or they want some type of position in society, and I feel sorry for the brothers and the sisters and everything that believe wholeheartedly in that stuff. and they using them. You know what I'm saying? But we need to be building economically to build our people up. We can't, if you can't afford a ticket to go to Africa, how you going to go to Africa? How you going to beg your way into the heart of the white man and make him treat you right? It's never going to work. It never had worked. This one messianic leader stuff has to be abandoned because it's never going to happen. No one man is going to get us out of nothing. We're going to have to do collectively, come together, do things, start sewing classes in your neighborhood, teach your young girls how to sew and make their own clothes. You know, some of these old people, stop being scared of the youth and making that as an excuse for you not to go out there. You know, like you scared of the youth, but you find a way to go outside and go to the store, go to the supermarket, go to work and everything. You still go outside. You ain't that damn scared of the youth. If you were scared as you say you is, you wouldn't even come out your house. So I'm telling you, these youths are looking for somebody to talk to them. I was talking to some young fellas in my neighborhood. They wasn't doing all the right things that you're supposed to do, but I was talking to them. And I was like, you know, brothers, you know, we got to stop killing each other. I said, only a fool kills his army. You know, you don't kill the soldiers that you're going to need in a war. And I'm not talking about no wars with no guns and all that stuff. Abandon that ideal and let somebody attack us. We need to be down producing and making things. The littlest things can make you some money. I mean, look at all these little inventions people made and got rich and stuff. I mean, we got to start thinking that, and when we get rich, we're not talking about getting rich, just throw your money away on some chicks and cars and houses, and you got all these mega $1 million, and all you can do is just throw it away on stupid things. Like that boxer got 40, 50 cars. How one man going to drive that many cars? He could have used that to help somebody. But we're not thinking like that. So we got to get reprogrammed from the way we think as a people, servitude, and it's all about me, what I can get. Because this has all been programmed in you from social engineering, from the way that you was from a slave all the way to today. And I tell people a lot, read Booker T. Washington books Up from Slavery. And when you see the thing that's going on with them slaves, think about the same things that's going on right now today. Nothing has changed but the need for the Negro but time. Time has changed. But you are still in a time warp of slavery and servitude in your mind. All you want to do is serve, go get a job. I must have a job. It's not that many Negroes that think about getting their own business. A lot of Negroes can't even afford to get their own business. But own business and doing something, you don't have to have a building. You don't have to. You can use your living room, your basement, anything to create things that you can sell. So it's not that hard. We had to stop making excuses as a people, pull ourselves up, and do something for ourselves because nobody else is going to do it for us. And one more thing before I say, these civil rights guys and these so-called leaders, when they step out of line, they do kill them. We're going to play this clip, and we're going to show to you how Martin Luther King, you know, coming from brother Steve Coakley, a lot of y'all young people might not know who he is, but he was a bad brother. He used to run with Dr. Khalid Abdul Muhammad. Was one of his good friends. And he was a researcher. And he went back and researched and looked that stuff and brought it forth in front of us so we can see what the real truth is. And when these Negro leaders get a little light in them, and they say, some people say Martin met Malcolm and met Elijah Muhammad, and that start changing his thinking and stuff. Or maybe he just had, you know, felt guilty and something that he had to do something. But they start threatening his life and everything when he got in the white man's business. Remember Jesse Jackson? Then when he got into Bush's business and everything, and they sidelined him and brought Sharpton up front as the new Negro representative of the white man. So they sidelined him. He got sick. You know, you don't even know. They made it, gave him some people said he sacrificed his son, locked his son up for his transgressions about the white man's business. So Astro Black, play the clip. Because nothing has changed. Just look, it's the same stuff going on. We have to change our direction. Go ahead, Astro. Ra.
Doctor is the one who was picked to replace Martin King, but Jesse is the one he trained. If you had spent all this time on putting him in place, and you ain't got nobody else around Martin. Now, Andy was supposed to be shot with Martin. But Andy wasn't on the balcony. He was on the floor, so he didn't get it. Ralph was inside, so he didn't get it. key point. If you spend all that time, and Martin's about to say you are agent, do you understand that you got to press go on the assassination? Because now Martin is so continuously condemning you, you got wiretaps everywhere. And we know what he said about Jesse in front of everybody, but who knows what he said when it was just him and Ralph? How much more severe was his accusations? Such that if you didn't kill Martin, white limitations don't run out on murder. Okay, let's let this run, and then we're going to go back and look at it again in straight speed. Look at.
Why,
look at Jesse. Martin still won't acknowledge it.
Usually says the speech he was covered.
Yes, go back. Now, I ask you, when you look at it, is that Jesus or Jesus? Jesus or Jesus? Nobody would touch him. Let it run. Now we're on the day of. Now Jesse done went and told them, look, you better move now.
Reteaching that time.
I'm running out of time. This is the last summer. They brought him on the balcony at 3:06.
I said, oh.
He was shot with a 30-06.
Oh, no, I called the house and dinner is not until 6. So we are in no hurry. Oh, my goodness. But by doing that, it gave me the wonderful privilege of spending the last hour of his life in room 306. He and Ralph Abernathy and myself. Then he and I were on the balcony. Ralph was still inside. And he was greeting people he had not seen.
I was in the parking lot, and we were suggesting that it was cool, and maybe he ought to go back and take a hot food with us.
My man, Hosea.
And we had a limousine. I could touch the limousine. It had been loaned to us by one of the local schools. And I heard a voice. The guy who was driving the limousine. He said, Dr. King. He said, although the car is loaned, it's chilly. I was going to get your coat. And the last word he said was, okay, Jones, get my coat. And Harrison said, pow.
Stop. Oh, stop. Go back. Key point. Let's go back. There's the maid right there we were looking for. There's the car. Oh. Okay, let's freeze it at the highest point where Jesse's back is in the... Right there. Stop. There we go. There's Jesse Jackson. There's the maid. There's the car. There's the white boy, Lau, L-A-U-E, head of the community strike, a member of the Community Relations Service of the Justice Department, which spies on racial tension. His boss was Roger Wilkins, the nephew of Roy Wilkins. There's Muriel McCullough, the FBI, CIA, Memphis Police Department informant, who now works for the CIA. There's Martin King laying there with the towel over his face. Brother, I appreciate this pointer. This really helped out a lot. There's Ralph. There's Andy. Now, why is Jesse running up this way when everybody else came up that stairway and went that way? Because he had to make sure that room 316 and 317 didn't have no remnant of invader running out of it. Remember, he had just, that could have been the invaders running down that ramp right there. And when those people start that phony pointing, maybe the invaders might have went, no, down there. You understand? Because the invaders had what? Okay. Now, there's the maid. There's the cart. You see that cart? There are the wheels. You understand? At 6 o'clock, you ain't changing no beds and no motel? Check. Okay, let's let it run. There's a good shot of McCullough. There's Martin with the towel over his face. There's Martin again.
I looked up and didn't see him on the balcony, except that I saw his shoes sticking out the end of the balcony.
There we go. That's good. There's that phony point. There's Jesse's head right there, making sure that he ran up there and gave a phony pointing. Now, here's the problem with the people pointing. All of the people pointing were this way, looking up to Martin. The shots came from behind them, whether from the bushes or from the rooming house, it was behind them. Not one single person said they turned around and saw somebody, but the rooming house, those that even saw anybody, Solomon Jones, Earl Caldwell, saw somebody moving in the bushes. Check? So how is it that those with their back turned suddenly become so definitive on something they didn't even see? You understand? It's not logical that their primary sources for a focus. Okay, we can turn the lights down. It was a script.
Cut it.
Right. So, and Andy's recanted his false pointing.
And covered it from his neck down. Someone had a towel put to it. Blood was just everywhere.
I went out in that yard and I started looking. And all...
Now listen how mad he was.
All the hatred in my life, which was a lot of hatred, came up in me. I went to reach into the air and take molecules.
That's my man.
And there, as you see.
Stop, stop.
On the shoulders.
Now, what's happening? NBC, Meet the Press, the most watched Sunday news program, goes back to this moment that we're out teaching is a point of distrust and evidence of Martin's dislike to Jesse. They go right back to that spot, put him right on Rockefeller's NBC, toss that ball right up, and say, Jesse, now when I toss this ball up, I want you to stuff it home. So he puts a circle around Jesse's head and a circle around Martin's head, calls it close, and says, you were one of Martin's closest associates. What did Martin King say to you the night before he died? What's up, Black?
Light.
Yeah, back it up. Get that sound in there. And Jesse gets to holding his eyes all up funny like in the negotiating system.
Oh, I'm happy tonight. I'm not worried about anything. I'm not fearing any man. My Lord has seen the glory. I'm coming
home. As he walks behind, and there, as he breathes, tapped on the shoulders by one Jesse Lewis Jackson.
Highlights two faces and wipes Ralph out.
This was an expression because I think we were all crying. This was in that the minister said that the writer was doing what the cop does. And then we were crying. It was kind of different. And like we realized he was on the version, like he had released himself. So he tried not to come to the church speaking of the act of ask this time. Off the seat, I said, and it went that long. And we went together.
Stop!
And the cop.
What did he say? He said that, he said, as you know, it was men crying, Ben Hooks and Billy Giles. And as you know, he asked me to make that speech that night. And I said I'd only make that speech if I can take Ralph with me. Now, here's the point. There would be no need to do no stupid stuff like that. Unless something else was going on that compelled the need to give him a chance to reconstruct history to protect his face from the faceless people who got the facts. There would be no need to do this. It just wouldn't be a need. Okay, let's go back. Let's hear it one more time, and then we'll pull that one out.
Yes, yes, yes. See, even amongst thieves and amongst those who are leading you astray, they fight. Just like you see today, you got the Moors fighting against the Hebrew Israelites. You got the people building schools fighting against everybody. You know, you got, you know, these people out here doing, saying they doing this, saying they doing that, teaching Kemet. And they fighting about Kemet. and fighting with the Moors, fighting with this. This stuff is total confusion, what y'all guys are going through. And if you're listening to this radio show, and I hope that you do, it'll be going on YouTube and everything. And I think we picked the name pretty good for you to listen about the intellectual pimps that have been pimping you in a circle. And we as a people ain't going nowhere but further down the drain. And sooner or later, they're going to lose interest in you completely in America. Like it's going on now. They're killing your pop, you killing your women. All kinds of things going on. Nothing has really changed because the Negro has not changed. He's just been one political football kicked around by the whites, kicked around by the Negro elite, the coons, and then because they want to keep their position in whites and white supremacy. And you are the mountain that they stand upon. The coons, the house Negroes, you call them, they do not want you to get free. Because if you get free, they become a target of white supremacy. And they know they cannot exist here without being over top of you. They're like the kings of their people. They be crowned by the powers that be. Some of y'all even crown them, yourselves. And they over top you, using you, abusing you, and not even pointing you in the right direction. And I know these so-called intellectual leaders, and they're supposed to be smart people and everything, can see what's going on here in America if we can see it. So we need y'all to change position, change y'all ideals on how this thing is supposed to go. If you don't know how to go, read Marcus Garvey's books. Read Henry McNeil Turner, what he was saying. Read all the people that was back in the day when the movement was real. Because all these new guys that you see today is nothing but a bunch of clowns, charlatans, and thieves. They're stealing your money and taking your money and taking you nowhere. Imagine the money that we gave to these people. Imagine the money at the Million Man March. Somebody told me, as I never went because I wasn't into that type of stuff, that they had garbage cans full to the top with money. Trash cans, outside trash cans, full with money, passing it around, people throwing that much money away. Now imagine if all that money was took and used for the elevation of our people, to build a factory, to build, you know, if you really want to build an industrial school, teach kids how to make stuff and how to build stuff and how to do stuff, you know. Technology. I mean, we could have used that money for anything, but the money got used by these so-called leaders for their own causes, for them to live large, for them to live up on the hill. You know what I'm saying? Back in the day, we had people that was our leaders. They lived in the same conditions we lived in. They was getting their butts kicked just like we was getting our butts kicked. They was down in the trenches with us. But now you got leaders that want to live up on the hill in Hollywood, upon Fifth Avenue in New York. And I mean, it's just crazy that we have fallen to this type of ignorance where we can just let anybody come and say they are a leader and you are following them wholeheartedly, believing in them to free you, the Jesus syndrome, I call it, and they're not taking you nowhere. And they're never going to take you nowhere. This has been another episode of Wake Up African People, and this is the Truth Doctor. Good night.